Hello, and welcome to episode number 2 of Orcs in the Basement, an RPG video game podcast, coming at you pre-recorded from the Land of Shadow deep in the volcanic pits of Mordor, also known by the locals as Portland, Oregon. I'm your host and DM for this episode, Jay Ortega. Welcome back! Yay, episode number 2. Hope y'all are staying cool this week. It's finally a little cooler after a hellish heat wave we got here in Portland this past week. Luckily, I was able to spend most days at home or in the library, which, on top of being a great literary resource for the community, doubles as a cooling center during heat waves. So shout out to the library. I was reading that this was the longest bout of triple-digit heat we've had in a while. I think it was record-breaking by some measures. On days when it gets this hot, my favorite thing to do is just slow down, find a cool place like the basement, and play hours of video games. Yes, that's right, folks. You are listening to Orcs in the Basement, a podcast where we enjoy talking about video games, most of which are RPGs, and by we, I mean me. Today we will be talking about the instant classic RPG masterpiece, Dragon Quest XI, a game that came out of my backlog in early 2023, and was also my introduction into the Dragon Quest franchise, a game that took me over 150 hours to finish according to the playtime meter on my Switch. Such a massive passion project by Dragon Quest devs that I will be splitting up into 2 or 3 episodes. So far the plan is, in part 1 I will focus on spoiler-free casual intro to the game, just my overall thoughts, first impressions, introduction, as well as some of my gameplay highlights. Part 2 will get more into the nooks and crannies of the story with some spoilers. So look forward to that if you've played the game or are just generally interested in the lore of Dragon Quest XI. Today is spoiler free, but before we get started on DQ11, let's look at the quest board for our journey. At the time of this recording, we are in the smack middle of summer. The Steam Summer Sale just ended on July 11th, just a few days ago. I didn't splurge too much this time around. I got Baldur's Gate 2 Enhanced Edition for like $6. I'm still not done with Baldur's Gate 3, but I just couldn't miss out on this, so another game to the glorious backlog. I also got Final Fantasy VIII for, I think, less than $10. I'm really excited to play that. I got that on the Steam Deck. And then I got Final Fantasy X-2 bundle for like $12.99, which I previously owned on the Switch, but I want to experience X-2 on the Steam Deck. So more on that once I'm ready to get started on my long-awaited playthrough of yet another Final Fantasy game. Outside of the sale, I got a game I just heard about a few days ago, and that is Moonring, which is completely free to play. It looks incredible. According to the Steam eShop, Moonring came out September 2023, so almost a year ago, and is made by the co-creator of Xbox Fable series, which is a game that I just have so much nostalgia for. I played Fable 1 and 2. Back when I was a kid, I remember just like staying home for like a week sick, and at least maybe for both occasions actually, and playing through them. So really, really great games. And so far what I've seen of Moonring, it looks so exciting. It's unlike anything I've seen before. It kind of plays on older RPGs that were created way before my time, but have adapted to modern sensibilities, so I'm really looking forward to exploring that a little bit more. So far, Steam has it tagged as a dark fantasy turn-based retro fusion of classic turn-based RPGs and roguelikes, all presented with a unique neon aesthetic. Like I said, it's free to play, looks simple, but also visually stunning. Almost reminds me of Loop Hero, but more on that once I actually play through it. And so far, the big summer contenders based on what I see on my Blue Sky feed are Dawn Trail for Final Fantasy XIV and The Shadow of the Erdtree, the latest expansion for Elden Ring. Both seem to be massive hits and have me wanting to drop my backlog to see what all the hype is about. I already have Elden Ring. I've played it for about like 2 hours, but I definitely need to get a lot further before I even start thinking about The Shadow of Erdtree, because it's an expansion pass that requires you to pretty much be done with the game before you can really like delve into that part. So it is going to take me a while. I'm not quite there yet. Alas, I am busy playing through some much older games like Xenogears, which is amazing. It's for the PlayStation 1, just stunning visually. I'm just like surprised by how much developers were able to accomplish with like the restrictions. It's brilliant storytelling, really, really enjoying it. I'm so many hours in, so I'm sure in the near future I will be talking about this game more in depth. But I'm also playing Final Fantasy VI on the Game Boy Advance, also same. Also a lot further in this game, I want to say like maybe 30 hours in. And the 2D HD triangle strategy, which is beautiful. It's on the Switch, and I highly recommend it. 40 hours into this game and loving it. I didn't know I was an RPG strategy girly, so I'm really excited to like explore other games in that same like subcategory. All of these are gorgeous and so much fun. And like I said, yeah, I'm pretty far into all three, so expect future deep dives in upcoming episodes. Last on today's quest board, we have Portland Retro Gaming Expo tickets that are now on sale. The expo runs September 27th through the 29th, and this will be my first year going. I'm really excited to go to Retro Gaming Expo. According to the website, it is Oregon-based, nonprofit co-op organization dedicated to creating awareness of and appreciations for classic video and arcade games through the presentation of events and conventions that celebrate the historic contribution video games have made and continue to make in popular culture. I believe any game older than 10 years is considered a classic at this point, something I just found out. So, quite a range of gaming generations will be on display during the expo. For more info, you can visit retrogamingexpo.com. Next, before we get started with DQ11, if you're a fan of the show and would like to follow on social media, you can find me on Blue Sky at orcsinthebasement.bsky.social. Also, I'm always happy to read your questions and letters during the show. So if you're so inclined, you can email me at orcsinthebasement@gmail.com for future mailbag episodes. Now, onward to the land of Erdria. While watching Kotaku's review of Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age by Tim Rogers, I noticed the emphasis he put on how the game is best enjoyed when treated as a bedtime story. So 1 hour, 30 minutes before getting ready for bed, you just play it, and apparently is the best way to play it, and I could not agree more. If you haven't already, I also recommend you check this review out. It's highly entertaining and informative. Loved it. Love everything Tim Rogers has released, and he's, yeah, very knowledgeable, very entertaining. In retrospect, it makes sense why this game took me several months to finish when I'm thinking about how I naturally fell into the cadence of treating it like a bedtime story. It felt very natural to play this game in arcs. Right off the bat, players should know that this game takes a long time to complete. It took me over 150 hours, like I mentioned, to finish this over the span of several months. Because I still consider myself a JRPG noob, there have been moments where I try to binge a lengthy game like this, only to find myself irritated and on the brink of burnout. So, learn my lesson, I'm not doing it currently anymore. Maybe an obvious take, but that is why I have in recent years begun to find balance by maintaining a rotation of games of varying length to prevent getting sick of lengthier classics, which luckily hasn't gotten that bad to the point where, like, I just don't return to the game. Dragon Quest XI was released in Japan for the Nintendo 3DS and PlayStation 4 in July 2017. Worldwide for the PlayStation 4 and Windows in September 2018. An enhanced version, Dragon Quest XI's Echoes of Elusive Age Definitive Edition, was released by Switch by Nintendo in September 2019 for PlayStation 4, Windows, and Xbox One in December 2020, and for Stadia in March 2021. I played it on the Switch, of course. I didn't have a PlayStation back then, otherwise I would have played it there, since most days I played it docked. Still, the game looks gorgeous on the Switch. It's up there with Monster Hunter Rise and Tears of the Kingdom. When it comes to games, I'm just shocked it looked that great on Switch. So, Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age, is my introduction into the Dragon Quest series. Directed by Takeshi Ishikawa, with brilliant collaborators such as the late Akira Toriyama and Yuji Horii, both of whom helped conceive the greatest RPG of all time, in many people's opinion, that is Chrono Trigger. Throughout the Dragon Quest series, both have been an integral part of the creative process. Chrono Trigger is one of my favorite JRPGs of all time. The elaborate time travel, the brilliant combat mechanics that complement characters' strengths as they riff on each other's abilities, the gorgeous world building, and the story are all the essence of a classic JRPG. And we continue to see these elements as they influence modern releases of Dragon Quest games and other JRPGs. And DQ11 is no exception, as it is rooted in the same principles of creative design and brilliant storytelling. Early on in the game, you can choose between a 16-bit style 2D version of the game or 3D. I believe you're able to toggle between both styles later on at churches and sacred statues, although there might be some caveat when switching back once you progress far enough in the game. I think it's that you start at the beginning of the respective chapter, since the 2D is not beat-by-beat identical to the 3D version. I mostly played in 3D, with the exception of times you go into Tickington through a fun and extensive side quest that comes later in the game. A reminder of just how massive this version of the game is, like, how? The Definitive Edition on the Switch has this much content, and I am just blown away. I'm considering playing this game again just in 2D. As much as I grew to love the voice acting, which I know got dunked on quite a bit back when it was released, the 2D version, however, does not include voice acting, and it plays more like a classic SNES era version of the game. Which, for all of you retro nerds, it just looks gorgeous, so I am definitely going to attempt to do a playthrough of that. Back to the voice acting. I personally think it's good. The Definitive Edition has the added bonus of Japanese voice acting, which was not available in prior versions, so you can always choose whether you want the added Japanese or English. I listened to it in English during my playthrough, and like I said, it was fine. Revisiting the game and watching playthroughs of what it looks like in 2D has me excited over the game I already took off my backlog. A long one at that. It also has elevated my hype level for Dragon Quest III 2D HD Remaster, which is still on the road to release on November 14th. According to a recent story by IGN, Dragon Quest III HD 2D Remake features new story elements, performance and graphic modes on PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X and S, and more. Speaking to Famitsu and translated by Genki underscore JPN on Twitter X, Square Enix said the classic role-playing game's remake features several improvements for modern players, while staying true to the original. Perhaps more notably, Square Enix is adding new story elements to Dragon Quest III. And while it's unclear how significant these will be, everything was supervised by series creator Yuji Horii. I doubt I will have enough time to finish another playthrough of Dragon Quest XI by November at my current pace, but I will for sure be playing the remaster of 3 on day 1 when it comes out. So I need to place that pre-order soon. So, Dragon Quest XI's story is set in a high fantasy world called Erdria. As the game starts, we focus in on the kingdom of Dundrasil. At first, a happy and sunny kingdom that is then covered in darkness as we see a little ghost figure bring forth a tempest of malice as a sign of the calamity that will soon follow. Dundrasil is soon taken over by an army of monsters. We're introduced to the protagonist as an infant, carried by a young girl, both being chased by headless horsemen through the woods and into the river. After they are caught and attacked, we quickly jump to a scene where we see the infant being carried away in a basket down the river. He survives. While floating downstream, an older man finds him and takes him back to his home in the village of Cobblestone, a pastoral and peaceful village. The protagonist is adopted by the man's daughter and raised in the town. We then jump forward about 15 or 16 years later as the town comes together with the protagonist for his coming of age ceremony. During the celebration and after his trial, the woman reveals the truth about his birth and adopting and sends him to meet King Carnelian of Heliodor. However, fearing that this young boy is the luminary, the king accuses him of being an evil entity and throws him into the dungeon. Whew. So right off the bat, we start with some very dark and strong themes, which I know sometimes the art style of Dragon Quest would make you think otherwise, but it definitely carries both and very, very well. This scene is set for our long journey ahead, and while things don't get brighter for the luminary, it is the friends we meet along the way that brighten the long and treacherous path. During last week's episode of Final Fantasy IX, I talked a little bit about how deeply felt the relationship is between each of your party members. In the story and with the battle mechanics, a thread that is also found in other iconic RPGs like Persona 5, which I also played, and it also took me over 150 hours to finish. They all make the gameplay incredibly dynamic and comforting, like a caldito de pollo on a cold, dreary day. Act 2 in particular is one of the pivotal moments in the story where the bond with your party members and the world around you is put to the test. And I have to say, I played this during the pandemic, and I played a lot of games during the pandemic. You will see this common thread. I mean, of course, it is not over, but I mean, early on in the COVID-19 pandemic, and I just remember really bonding with this game. Act 2 just felt too real. I won't spoil it for you, but if you played it, oh my god. Or if you get to play it and you get to Act 2, just remember this. I think it was one of my favorite parts of the game. Because I was able to find catharsis within it. And then also, one of my favorite characters like leads in with Act 2, and I just remember ugly crying. You'll probably guess it's Silvando. I won't reveal any more details, but he is just one of my favorite characters. So, you not only have Silvando, the charmingly handsome circus performer with a heart of gold and incredibly strong battle mechanics, but you have Eric, a misunderstood thief who you befriend early on in Dundrasil's dungeon. So Eric, I don't know why I started with Silvando. Eric is the first person you meet. I think it's just Silvando is so great. And of course I'm focusing in on him more than the other characters, but they are all incredible. We have the twin sisters, Serena the healer and Veronica the mage from the land of Arborea. Both go through a deep transformation in their character arcs that deeply change the way you think about just the combat at that point and job systems, with just as much impact and drama as Cecil from Final Fantasy IV, I think. But feel free to have some friendly banter with me if you disagree. Then, and I'll keep these mysterious because they come much later in the game, but we have Jade and Rob, the mysterious duo who join you much later in your quest as they seek to aid the Luminary after revealing some wig-snatching secrets about the history of Dundrasil and the Luminary. I recommend this game to folks who like longer RPGs that are heartfelt, who possibly been on the fence of where to start with Dragon Quest. I think this is a great introductory entry. It just is the culmination of all the Dragon Quests that came before. It is so great. It just is a love letter to the Dragon Quest series, JRPGs. It has so many wonderful tropes. And like I said, it just feels like a warm chicken soup on a cold, dreary day. It's just so great. And especially now, like, I try not to lean too much into escapism, but this game just helped me out through so much, and it's one of those masterpieces of a story that comes once in a generation, and a lot of people critiqued it for how simple it is, but I feel like if you're willing to give it a shot, just know that there's a lot of thought that went into this game, and if you're someone who's interested in, like, looking at the finer details and have the patience for a longer JRPG, I don't think you will be disappointed. This is just such an emotionally packed story, fun gameplay mechanics. I am so excited to delve deeper into other Dragon Quest games. My introduction to JRPGs have been rooted in Final Fantasy, so I just remember hearing about this often alongside it, being that it's also from Square Enix, and giving it a chance, I'm really, really enjoying it. So I know a lot of people are, in the West particularly, aren't as big fans as they are in Japan, but I think this game really performed really well in the West. So it's just such a great game, especially if you get the Definitive Edition. So much gameplay, it's just, yeah, it's wild. It took me a long time to finish, and I feel like I still missed out on quite a bit. So, like I said, I'll be playing through that 2D version of the game. As I was recording this and took a break, I started a new game. There isn't a new game plus on this game, by the way, so I was a little disappointed about that, but I started a new game, a new save file underneath my completed 3D version. And I'm excited to play it. Apparently, the original release on the Nintendo 3DS had on the top screen the 3D version. Of course, lesser graphics, not as gorgeous as the Definitive Edition on more modern consoles. But still, just, I am amazed they were able to fit that game into the 3DS. While also having a 2D version of it on the bottom screen. How they did that, I have no idea. As far as I've looked, and I haven't looked that deeply, but it seems like this version of Dragon Quest XI on the 3DS is only available in Japan. So I might not be playing it unless there is a version out there that is localized to English. So let me know if you know of a version like this. So anyway, these are just some of my spoiler-free thoughts on the game. I will be delving into the nitty-gritty in part 2 and possibly 3. It is a long game, and I have so many thoughts about it, especially when we get into spoiler territory. If you're interested in sharing comments on your own experiences with Dragon Quest XI or with the franchise in general, please feel free to share via email at orcsinthebasement@gmail.com or via Blue Sky Social, where you can find me at orcsinthebasement.bsky.social. Now we will move on to the last segment on the show as I give you some loot to aid you on your journey, but first, a quick break. And we are back. Time for some loot in the form of recommendations. As we are deep into summer, I wanted to share two of my favorite nostalgic summer films. Extra points if you get it from your local public library. Reminder that the library is such a great resource. I think I checked out both of these films from the library, if not at least one of them, and it just reminded me of being younger and having that resource. So anyway, the first is Summer Wars. Summer Wars is a 2009 Japanese animated science fiction film directed by Mamoru Hosoda. The film tells the story of Kenji Koiso, a timid 11th grade math genius who is taken by Yuda, by 12th grade student Natsuki Shinohara, to celebrate her great-grandmother's 90th birthday. However, he is falsely implicated in the hacking of a virtual world by a self-aware, sadistic artificial intelligence named Love Machine. Kenji must repair the damage done and find a way to stop the rogue computer program from causing any further chaos. This movie reminds me so much of another classic, Digimon the Movie, with the action-heavy narrative based on the metaverse-like world, all while having some very summer vibes. And I do believe that the writer and director also worked on the Digimon film, especially when they're in the metaverse. Like, it just reminded me, it's parts of it are just a copy of the Digimon movies, and I'm really excited to see this replicated and expanded on. If anything, I feel like Summer Wars was the original text, and a lot of these ideas were then kind of adapted to the Digimon film. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's just, I feel like I enjoyed Summer Wars so much more because I feel like it was a more complete story that really focused on the metaverse, so really recommend it. And like I said, it does have this very like Japanese summer nostalgic kind of lens. Last, we have another great Japanese animated film by the same creator. It's The Boy and the Beast. And like I mentioned, it's also directed and written by Mamoru Hosoda. In this one, 9-year-old Ren has recently lost his mother. With no news of his father and refusing to live with his legal guardians, Ren flees into the streets of Shibuya. Ren steals some food and sleeps in an alley, reminiscing the aftermath of his mother's funeral. In the Beast Kingdom, the Grandmaster has decided he will retire order to reincarnate as a deity and names two potential successors. The popular Yozen, who is also the father of two children, Ichiro Hiko and Jiromaru, and the powerful Komatetsu, who is lonely and lazy. The grandmother suggests that Komatetsu find a disciple in hopes of inspiring him to succeed him. Another great film with all the summer vibes, also deeply heartfelt and fast-paced. Loved it. A reimagining of the metaverse. In this film, it's more high fantasy, and I really loved it. So good. On my queue, I currently have the Netflix series Scavengers Reign, which is incredible. I believe it had moved from Showtime to Netflix. I'm on episode 3, so not a lot to say outside of it just being another great animated series. We really need to do good by our animators, really paying close attention to some of the calls to unionize and have more equal pay for the work that they do. Is just a modern example of just all the artistry and talent that is often neglected by the industry and aren't given their proper flowers because of capitalism and whatnot. So anyway, Scavenger's Reign has some beautiful messages regarding what a dystopian sci-fi future might look like. So I'm just a few episodes in, really enjoying it. It's a show that came up recommended after I finished watching Delicious in Dungeon. Very, very different in tone. But I'm still enjoying it. It's a little bit more serious, a lot more drama. So definitely stay tuned for more thoughts on that. And I am also starting, I'm halfway through the BL movie, also known as Classmates. I can't pronounce the Japanese name. I believe it's Japanese. If not, I will put a correction on that. But it is BL anime, and in it, English, it translates to Classmates. I'm hoping to get the time to relax and watch them this week, but who knows? This may be loot for a future episode, so stay tuned for that. And last, thank you so much for tuning into episode 2 of Orcs in the Basement, an idiosyncratic RPG video game podcast for the rest of us. Catch us next week for a reflection on the game Digimon Survive. Safe travels and good luck on your journey. Nos vemos.